ahead and get started. First up this afternoon, we have the recessed council meeting from last evening. So I will call that meeting to order. All other business has been dispensed with, so we'll move directly to the tabled items, and I would entertain a motion to remove vote J1 and 2 from the table.
By unanimous consent, I move to remove items from the table.
Do we have to note a quorum for this?
We can note for the record that we do have a quorum. We have one council member absent, council member Wojcik.
All right. By unanimous consent, I move to remove items J1 and J2 from the table.
All right, so we'll take up item J1 first, which is the Smart Lab Hood Solutions Economic Development Request. Again, you'll recall that both of these agreements really had the same concern in that the agreements were slightly incomplete, and what you have in your packet now are the completed agreements. So questions or discussion on the Smart Lab Hood agreement? Mr. Campion.
I think the addition of the ready letter is a good one. I don't know if that was in the original packet, but going forward, I'd like to make sure those are with everything we do here, that we have those final statements, because that kind of lays out the intent, and I just am glad that the document got updated with all those specific things. So, yeah, going forward, I'm just going to expect that gets done, and given that was done, I'm going to move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Campion, second by Mr. Bilbeck. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries 6-0. Item J2 is the Go Route Economic Development Fund request. Similar discussion, I assume.
Yeah, I guess the only one I'll say about this, we should revisit our policy. I want to see the council schedule a time to revisit the policies that are governing this document, or the approval of these loans. I don't necessarily think we should look to reinterpret them on a loan-by-loan basis, but we need to just revisit that loan criteria to make sure that's still accomplishing the goals we want. And I say that without necessarily referring to the one that's before us, but more general statement. So there was a section, I think, four-part document that had a whole bunch of principles in it. They look a little bit dated. They certainly don't seem to be reflecting the current state of the city's investment environment. So
I think largely you have to remember that within Ready, they have these projects are all thoroughly vetted by subgroup and then the full board. And then largely the reason it comes to us is only because the loan exceeds a threshold of, I think, $75,000. Otherwise, they would handle it completely internally.
Yep, and
or maybe you're asking something different.
Yep, something a little bit different. On page 17, there's attachment B that's the City of Rochester, Minnesota's business subsidy criteria. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 sections of that document. That's actually our policy. So I think at a point in the future, especially in the COW, I'd like to see us revisit this and just go over that, make sure that this is still meeting our goals for the city. And frankly, I think some of the language just seems a little bit unhelpful. It's kind of taken from the design of take a step back and kind of stand with arms crossed across our chest and try and figure out how to say no to things. And a lot of these, I think we do better by putting what we're hoping to achieve instead of kind of boxing us in for what we don't hope to achieve. So I just, that was kind of more a reflection of that. I think last time the applicant did a good job of answering all the questions I brought up about it. I am really happy to see the warrant piece called out a little bit better, so I thought that was done too. So I don't have any concerns. I move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Campion, second by Mr. Hickey. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries 6-0. Being no other business, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
By unanimous consent, move adjourn.
All right, we stand adjourned. Now we'll move on to the Committee of the Whole meeting for today. And the first item being a revenue discussion. Mr. Martinson, please lead us through that.
I'll start. And Dale will walk us through the detail. So in the write-up in your Committee of the Whole, we talked about a continuation of last week's meeting. It's really a continuation of a conversation we started in May. We came forward to the council, we were actually in the chamber. and just talked about what we're starting to see for the budget for 2019 and beyond. And there we started to talk about some of the revenues and looking at our payment in lieu of taxes, LGA, local government aid, and a few others, and how they're relatively flat and maybe in some cases declining or just being very stable. And talk about how for many years we have been very much focused and dependent on your property tax levy to support the majority of your services, and for sure any expansion or enhancement services has typically had to be on the backs of your property tax versus looking at other sources. So today we're not asking for the council to provide us any direction unless you so choose, but it's really to start getting a little more in depth on the revenue and really a chance for the council to start talking amongst yourself about that. So Dale's going to walk through just a few things. Like I said, it's a leading off from last week's meeting where you started to see some of the historic numbers, and so we wanted to provide you a little more. So, Dale?
Yeah, in fact, I'm actually going to pull some of the slides from the auditor's presentation from last week that I'm sure you've got all of it anyway, but I just want to point out a few things from that. So, again, I just want to talk about this, you know, it's a growing city, it's been a growing city for a long time, and just going to talk about some of the sources to fund our governmental activities. So this is not going to be about our utilities or any of those other funds that actually get sources of revenue directly to pay all of their costs. So this is about things that end up in some form or fashion relying on the tax levy to fund them. Look at a lot of 10-year trends just so you can kind of see where things are going and maybe think about where they might go in the future if we don't do something different about them. A little brief talk about alternative sources, but again, like Steve mentioned, we're not doing a direct ask today. I actually said on here 2019 plus, because if we do start trying to address some of these things, it'll probably take a while to get that in place, so it may not be something we actually can do necessarily for 2019. Again, just this look at the growth of the community. This is just looking at estimated market value, and once you keep in mind, this also includes inflation. So, you know, when we look at the change from 1 year to the next, the last few years we've looked at, it's been about 2 to 2.5, 2 to 7.5 of actual new construction, but then there's been another 7, 7.5% or whatever of inflation in the property. So there's inflation and growth of new assets in here. If you just look at population growth, it's been more like 1.75 or 1.89% on households compounded growth over the last 10 years.
We have a question.
Yep. So when you use inflation in that context, you're talking about the increase in
market value. Right. Yeah, this, so again, when you're looking, this is not just new construction,
yeah.
Obviously. It's also the growth. One point I'm going to make about those little yellow portions of that, that's another one of these sort of issues that gets us into the situation. That is called what used to be paid for by the state directly to us, half of payments, basically. We actually have cash that would reduce our tax levy, and the state would pay it to us to take the burden off. What they've done instead is now excluded a certain market value of homes that are a lower value, and basically that just shifts it to like all the other property taxpayers. So it really, we don't get that money anymore. It's no additional fused money. It takes that, you had to make up the difference for that, and that gets shoved to everybody else except that lower value. So again, one of those impacts over the years. So again, as a growing city, there are new operating costs. It's not just the initial cost of paying for the assets, but it's maintaining it. And again, we talk now about trying to have a capital reserve replacement program, because it's not just building the building, but how do you maintain it over time. We're talking now about the new North Precinct, perhaps a library expansion, whatever comes from the DMC, projects that actually get approved, such as the Chateau. All of those have an impact on that operating budget. Unless we have other sources for it, it ends up being tax levy impact. And because of that growth and the new demand, it makes it hard to deal with existing backlog on things that we already know there are backlogs. We've had multiple presentations about the street backlog for life cycle costs and facility. And so we're just looking at what are the funding sources for those things. Excuse me. So back to this slide was in last week's presentation, but you know, the primary things that we've had to fund this has been property taxes, LGA, and then lieu of tax. That's sort of been the three stools we used to rely on. That LGA number that's now down around $6 or $7 million used to be $11 million back in 2002, but then dropped way off. It's come back some, but pretty stagnant. in fact, the estimates we have for next year are about $11,000 increase, so like 0.15%, not even a quarter of a point increase. So as the city grows, we don't have that growing along with it, so the, it falls to property tax. And similarly, with in lieu of tax, we'll take a little deeper dive into that. But that, as you can see, has been pretty flat.
Dale, can I get you to go back two slides?
Two slides, yeah.
That right there on the new operating costs, are these aren't necessarily the projects. Are these examples or are these?
They're just examples. Okay. As we grow and we make bigger things, we just take more money, and unless we find some other sources to help join us, it just all falls to property tax.
Perfect. I just wanted to make sure I was clear. Yep. Okay, thank you.
And then the other main source that charges for services. And again, relatively flat, the jump that we've seen in the last 2 years is primarily related to the Mayo Civic Center and the expansion of that facility. But if you take that out of there, because again, that's actually needed to run the facility, that again, those charges have been pretty flat. So I think as a separate presentation, we're gonna come back with a fee revenue that we're gonna bring back to the council and look at all of them at one time, I believe, this time. And then this other category, there is some things in there with special assessments and utility connection charges and private contributions to construction, especially. That is, again, one of those things the council would look at and find, you know, different policies, different methods, or whatever, because whatever we aren't able to pay for, a new construction, new infrastructure with by developers basically falls back to the tax levy again. So I'm going to start here a little bit talking about two other funds. So they're special revenue funds, but they're also governmental funds. So they get other revenues into them to pay a good share of their cost, but they actually rely on tax levy for everything else. So if you see the parking circle there, back in last year, there were property taxes of $6.83 million to go to the whole rec system, and you'll be able to list up all the items there. But property taxes were 62% of the revenues in 2017. If you go back as far as 2008, the property taxes were $4.8 million, or only 46%. So basically, we're kind of losing ground on that split. Again, part of revisiting the fees, and there are some fees that we maybe can't. I mean, it might be the golf revenues. If you increase them, you lose. You know, they aren't going to generate enough additional revenue, because some people may stop. But just in a general sense, we're losing ground on tax levy versus outside revenues. If you look at the library, again, that's a special revenue fund primarily because the county pays a share of those costs. But again, if you look back in 2008, $924,000 versus 2017, $949,000, we only picked up $25,000 less in that period of time. So again, that one's become pretty much all.
Question down here, Dave.
Dale, are we expecting to see that to decrease?
Yeah, so some of the things I'm going to show you today, there are things you can do something about, and then there are others you really don't have a lot of choice, because part of what's happening there is that the county share decreases as the city expands, right? I mean, there are less people there in the rest of the county that isn't part of the city. So I don't really see that changing a lot unless somehow you go back and negotiate a whole different contract on what that calculation is.
Right, as some of these small cities then develop their own libraries, there's another chunk that gets taken out of their
current. Actually not. At least the way the current law reads, the county levies its share on all the non-city property taxes for library service, and that includes ones that might even have their own, I think. I got to go back and double check that.
All right. Thank you.
And again, speaking of revenue sources that you can't do a lot about, again, I just think these are important for you to see so that you understand how this keeps falling to the property tax and how you might need to be finding other sources for it. But the first one are construction permits. Again, I'm looking at significant revenues that support the general fund. And certainly construction permits do, but they're pretty volatile. And so you see that the last one is actually 2018 budget. You see that it always drops off a bit on these because we're trying to be a bit conservative. Back in 2005, you just see a little footnote up in the corner, which is a little laser printer, a little laser thing. But it was $2.77 million when we kind of hit our peak before the economy kind of slowed down. We had permits of $2.7 million, but by 2009, you see they dropped to $1.4 million. So if you're counting on that money and you're trying to budget too heavily on those revenues and they fall off, then you're not going to meet your budget at the end of the year. cable TV franchise, again, started out at $1,270,000, and we're only at $1,440,000 after 10 years later. Again, cable bills keep going up from everything I hear, but this does not cover internet services, so all we get are the cable TV bills, and perhaps people are finding other alternatives as the city grows, that other people are finding other alternatives besides cable TV. And fire protection services, that's another one that's sort of like the library, where we get a portion of the, it's calculated, I wish Terry was here, but it's calculated based on the assessable value of the property. So we charge the townships to respond to their fires outside of the city. But again, as the city gets larger and there gets to be less property to assess that against, then those numbers keep coming down. So another significant source, but it's actually declining for us. So a little bit on lodging tax, and here's where I start getting into trouble. So there's a 4% lodging tax we cover for operations. There's another 3% that just goes directly to debt service for the Mayo Civic Center. But in terms of operations, 1% of the I call it RCVB, but it is the
Express Rochester.
Thank you. I put ER there. I can't remember what it said for after I wrote it. But 1% goes there by law. They actually went back a number of years and got a law that put 1% directly to them. Then there's another 1% that by agreement we agreed to pay to them. It stems from way back. We were paying them an amount every year just based on their budget. And eventually it got close to 1%, so we just kind of set it at that by an agreement. But that then continues to grow as the lodging tax grows. The remaining 2% goes to cover whatever the gap is in funding the Mayo Civic Center for the year, and the rest of it falls to the general fund. But you can see the line in blue down at the bottom. The line of blue down here, it's gone from $1,100,000 down to $719,000 that is actually going to the general fund, because Civic Center's taking up some more. The RCVB keeps the full 2%, and so we're kind of just left with what's left over, so that's dropped a bunch. Again, that agreement runs until the end of 2019, I believe, so with the RCVB. This is just another little picture of it. Mayo Civic Center actually increased their revenues quite a bit, you see, in 2017, but again, their expenses went up quite a bit too, and so our reliance on the lodging tax also went up. And then payments in lieu of tax. So,
should we pause it maybe? Just yep. A lot of information. Anything at this point before we get into our pilots?
I'm sorry.
Any clarification at this point? You've been throwing a lot of numbers at right now, so make sure. Okay.
Makes sense.
So a payment in lieu of tax is another one of the main sources that we have for revenue. It's calculated a little differently for each utility, and I can't even tell you exactly all the history and how we got here. I know it's been revisited a number of times. But the electric utility is, 0.007% or of a penny. For every kilowatt hour that is used that they haven't used themselves. And then it's adjusted by CPI, but only in the years that there was a rate increase. So I think they went about 3 or 4 years without a rate increase, and so that number never adjusted at all. And the same kind of thing happens on the water utility. They get 6.5 cents per cubic 100 foot of water, but that again is only adjusted on the years of rate increase. I think they just last year started a couple of rate increases, or have lined up a few, but prior to that they had been for a long time. Sanitary sewer is 7% of gross revenues, parking 9%, stormwater 8%, and I have no idea again why those differences. I think it started at the time when they were modeling it and saying, well, how much of an impact would that have against net revenues that they were operating at. I think parking was higher because at the time parking got almost pretty much all of their assets for quote unquote free because the TIF paid for so much of them in the downtown area. So that's the calculation anyway. Here are all the numbers. I did this actually for Mike and then didn't really forget he was going to be here. But if you want to go back to these, but you can see the electric is up there in the $8 million range where the others are quite a bit less than that. $1.7 million now for the sewer, parking at $600 and stormwater at $531 and stormwater down at $377. And so looking at these on a graph, so these include all the utilities except the electric utility, because that's way up there in the $8 million range, and the scale was just messed up like that, so I'm separating those. But again, if you look at sewer is the top one that's grown pretty well, because we've actually come back and adjusted a number of different times, trying to both cover debt service and plan for what we know future expansion needs that have to be there in the midst of conservation. And so some of these things struggle with conservation efforts, which we all love. It's just that when you try and plan for bond issues and you've got conservation going on, all of a sudden you find your revenues aren't quite what you had planned for. But there's been growth in that one. There's been growth in parking revenues. And even, we didn't have many rate increases until just in 2015, but even the storm sewer is starting to grow some in terms of its contributions to the general fund, and therefore less reliance on taxes. But if you look at the water fund, it started out at $374,000 back in 2008, and it's now down to $370,000. Again, conservation of water, and then those rates not changing much at all during that time. Electric in lieu is a similar story. It's the blue line. Started out at $8,391,000 10 years ago, and now it's at $8,421,000. Really not much change at all. And that green line is basically supposed to represent if we just did that electric utility based on gross revenues like the other ones, and even pick the lowest one of the three that we have at 7%, that number would not only be quite a bit higher, which is represented by the purple, but then as the revenue starts to increase, you'd actually pick up that difference. And right now, even just that one couple of years, which would be another million or so. Right now, they're paying probably about 5.9% or something of gross revenues, what they were in those earlier years. So, solutions to consider: that we just let everything fall to property tax, because as these existing revenues have stayed flat, there really isn't much public choice at this moment. That's why you see those big increases. Or you could adjust existing revenue sources where possible. If we do go back and change in lieu of calculation, change the lodging tax shares, or we do fee adjustments to keep up with costs on the other ones. And again, this is a separate presentation that departments are bringing in all of it. Or we start looking at new sources, and I know we've brought some of these up before, astute light utility, franchise fees. We talked about, at the time we did the street backlog discussion, we talked about a franchise fee on the gas, that we actually have the ability to open that up again in our current contract, but I think we at one point said we could generate up to $8 million off of that. But there was some discussion at the last legislative session about an override referendum. It actually failed, but there was discussion because some other cities are thinking about these options also, and some already have them in place. But if at that legislation, the way it was written is if you ever started a new one, you had to open it up for a possible reverse referendum. So it could basically be challenged, is what I'm saying. The street utility has been talked about for years again, but there's still legal challenges to doing that. And we could introduce additional development fees. I know Richard Fries has a packet about, still left it at his desk, but there's a packet about that thick of all kinds of additional development fees that we brought forward in the past, but just haven't passed. And I know one of the conversations has always been, well, people would rather have these things on their property taxes because they can write those off. But I think Michael mentioned that argument probably goes away now under the current tax legislature, current tax bill the way it is, since most people are probably taking a standard deduction. So it might be a time that you want to reconsider that kind of moving some of those things to fees. The other thing with doing fees instead of the tax levy is you end up, in some situations, you pick up a more equitable spread of it because it isn't just based on property tax value, and it covers people that already, or entities that are tax exempt as well. So you might start picking up revenue and spread it across a larger group. And then I'm open to other ideas anybody has. But that was my quick little lunch.
All right.
Or any questions?
Questions, comments?
He's a ray of sunshine.
Yeah, I mean, there's always just the need for revenue diversification because we're so reliant on one thing. I mean, there's any day that the legislature can come back in with levy limits. I don't know if any of you were around during those, but those are always painful at some point. They usually do it at the time that they drop some of their funding for us and then throw in a levy limit on top of it, so you really have no choice with the cut.
Dale, I know it would be more work, but Would there be an opportunity to, if we had some ideas, you know, six ideas, different ideas, to model that? So that, for example, if we were going, because one of the things we talk about is you know, what does a 1% increase in the property tax levy look like? How does that translate into dollars? So as we talk about some of these other things, whether it be development fees or whatever else, again, I appreciate there's more work involved, but it would be helpful to model what a policy change impact would be on the financial side.
Right. I think we were just basically trying to throw out some ideas so that we could figure out what things are worth going into more study.
Right.
I think we could bring up all kinds of ideas, but if the council isn't willing to support any of them, then it's kind of... But again, anything anybody's even willing to want to look at, we're even more than happy to.
Mr. Reimer?
And I think looking into the future, as we've talked about changing our process, which I have heard from a few people, that the process might generate more money, which it won't. It's just our process.
Are you sure?
Yeah. We never we'll keep bringing. That being said, though, we have talked about looking at multi-year budgets as well as forecasting. And so Dale and I and Rachel are looking at working with Springsteen to do some modeling and forecasting for us. So I would suspect by next year at this time, you should have a strong model in place where exactly to your point, you could have it up there. And we could model things in real time, just make some assumptions to see how that changes at least the financial forecast. There's still a lot of big decisions behind that, but we will have that tool in the next year.
Mr. Ruskin?
One of the things that we've talked about in the past, and I've never seen anything done on it, and it's the new revenue source that I think, you know, when you put others' ideas, is the naming rights of a lot of our facilities here in town. I don't think we have any, and a lot of cities are taking that on, and obviously it's more desirable when you have a newer facility, but... it's one of the things that I see in other cities. Everywhere we go, there's names on the buildings along with the name of the building. You know.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of discussion about that and costing even, which I never gotten at that far when we were talking about the Mayo Civic Center and the arena and that kind of stuff. Yeah. There was quite a bit of numbers actually put to it by a consultant that specializes in that. But it's different in every market, so you need somebody who knew what specialized in it.
And I think we could find that out there if it's something that we're open to. But, you know, we've got a town that has the rec center and the bubble and the field house. And the, you know, I mean, we could use some names on some of those that would help with the additional revenues. I mean, it's not going to make a world of difference, but it is a way to trend that upwards. It's something that I don't think we're tapping into. So something to think about.
Okay. Mr. Campion.
We've talked about this idea, but having had about... a bunch of them replaced in one of my neighborhoods this summer, just like all of you, I'm sure. I would like to revisit the sidewalk utility as a way to get away from assessing a $400 or $500 a panel fee against some of the residents there. I don't think it's equitable. I think it's can feel punitive, and it actually can, frankly, really financially hurt families that are already on the edge in terms of financial situations to show up with a surprise $600-$800 bill that they weren't expecting. And we have, frankly, the math and the numbers to utilitize this and to make it into something that doesn't have to be a scare and that people can budget and plan for. It's been brought up before. I didn't have support, so I wouldn't support staff investing time in it unless we feel like there's an opportunity to do so. But just shifting those sorts of costs that we experience off of everyone's surprise yearly bill payments, I think can make a difference. And first it gets to, I think, I don't know if he's here, but that priority for myself of being a little bit more friendly city. And I think showing a way to do that maybe instead of an $800 bill once every 20 years is financed over the 20 years worth of time we would have had to pay it would make a much better way to tackle some of those expenses. So I'll advocate for that, but would like to see some modeling. I just think that's a no-brainer here.
Mr. Bilderbeck and Mr. Ruskin.
I would like to see, and I guess Aaron, we and Steve, we've talked about the street utility and the legislative hurdles that we'd have to do. Have we made any contacts with any of those, cities of the first class?
The discussion's active, and actually, Kat is one of the projects as an intern has been working on kind of a presentation we can put together. We actually have sort of drafted out some legislation that is sort of interchangeable between Rochester only or cities of the first class as an effort. It's been a challenge at the statewide level with the League of Cities to make that authority broadly applicable, but it is something we're looking at. If we go into something like that, our goal would be to have support of local organizations like the Chamber. And so I think we're trying to put together a presentation where we can go to the Chamber and talk to them about that with something that's very specific, that the business community can understand, that the council and the community can understand, and then potentially advocate Rochester as a pilot or a smaller pilot of cities in the first class. So, but it isn't something, unless we get that statutory special legislation,
right,
that we can do.
Well, and it's, now's the time we need to start on, so it's really good to hear that you've been working on it, because if we're going to get other cities like St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Duluth on board, and I think that would be our best opportunity. I think it's a tough goal when we go by ourselves, but and the mayor and myself will be at the coalition this week. So
we're trying to assess what the composition of the legislature looks like,
yeah.
So that'll play into maybe what our best strategy is. I'd also say, actually, Dylan, Chris, and I met this morning with Kat as well, and we're trying to develop a methodology for how that fee would actually charge out, you know, to the ratepayer, so to speak. And so if you have thoughts or suggestions or ideas on that, we'd appreciate those.
Mr. Ruskin?
I was just going to say, I've got a couple new ideas on fees. I'm not real excited about adding a new fee. It's just really another name for another tax. But the sidewalks, I know when we go through those, the ones that I went out and visited last year, and nothing against staff, they're doing their job, but they're awful nitpicky on a lot of those things, and I think we maybe want to revisit some of our policy on what we're requiring people to change out. Might help a lot of people. So that would be part of that. If we're going to look at that, we certainly need to look at what we're requiring to have redone. And
I'm supportive of that. Can we build a coalition to get this done? If I can get the utility, I'm more than happy to look at what we're replacing, but the hard part right now is I think we have great sidewalks.
it's really good to have great sidewalks.
I've been to communities that have bad sidewalks, and you know them if you've been there, but let's balance it. But I agree. I'm a budgeter and I'm a planner, so I don't like the idea of surprise bills. That's not a good way to show people you care about their financial future. So I think that there's a way to do that, and if that means that maybe we get a little bit less stringent about what we're replacing and we utilitize it. The nice part, if you had a utility, you could look at it aggregate over the city, and you could look at whether we're ebbing and flowing with the quality of sidewalks and what we're replacing to balance utility out, which I think would be a better model for that, but we'd have to figure out how to structure that.
Well, just to be clear, I didn't say I'd support it.
Well, listen, if I just talk like you're already supporting it, I'll get you there.
No, I just want to make sure we're clear.
I heard support.
In some of these cases, especially like the sidewalks, we need to look at what the expectation is. We don't allow grinding at the moment. Would grinding be a way to lessen the cost and to preserve the life of the sidewalks? And I think if we're going to go down the road of looking at sidewalk utilities, again, we need to look at what we would allow and what we don't allow. And do we look to see what has now become best practices since we put these together?
Mr. Mayor, you had a comment.
Well, I'll just follow up on the street utility. I think it's a good idea to promote that or see what we can do. And so, but you know, we did try and get the kind of the cities of the first class together last a year ago. And I know two of them had elections going on, so maybe that impacted them, new mayors in St. Paul and Minneapolis. We sent them registered letters out. Only got one reply back. Duluth decided to go and try and get their sales tax to do it, and then it didn't even get a hearing at the legislature at that time. They had got it approved in Duluth to do it, but they needed approval from the legislature, and they didn't approve it. So I think it's a good time to pursue it again. It is something that the League of Cities hasn't been positive about. So we don't have that, but we were trying to maybe be the model, see what we could do, start with a smaller group. So, but I think it's worth keep pushing, because everybody's going to be, not only is going to be, but are facing the same thing.
It's not unlike when we had, when Destination Medical Center first came to fruition, and we were given multiple choices by the legislature on how to pay for our portion.
And I think we went through some analysis there that where we discovered some of the elements were just not with far more work than what we would gain. For example, adding a fee onto tickets or something like that. So I think we could do something similar here where, you know, I don't think we want to introduce, you know, 10 new policies and many of them are going to take far more work to administer than what we might gain. So I just think we want to, whatever we do, it sounds like we need to do some things, and none of those are going to be palatable necessarily, but whatever we do, we should do things that, you know, have the best benefit for our community. Anyone else? Well, I do appreciate having the discussion early in this process as we're going through, and I do agree with the, I still like the idea of the multi-year budget, because if, you know, if we're starting these discussions every year brand new, it just seems like it can get pretty challenging. So, and I think people would like some predictability if it's possible. All right.
Okay.
Move on to our next topic, economic growth and community investment. Ms. Reimer?
Yep, I will start this, and Wayne Parrish will also be involved. I want to thank our planning teammates that are all here, and everyone here, so thanks for being here to listen to the next conversation. So just like the first item that we talked about revenues, this is a continuation of multiple conversations now that the council's had, PASC has had, county board has talked, depending on the place as well as in their end. And today, rather than talking of both the questions that we posed last time in May, it's really coming back with talking about the community development department. And just a reminder for the council as well as those that are here, we presented the entire department, meaning where the city would create its own department that would have all the different aspects of planning. The county would also have their department as we find areas that we can collaborate and cooperate. At that point, what we brought forward to you in May was a plan that included 17 additional employees for the department. We estimated it was right around $2 million in net cost. There's about 700,000 in revenues, give or take, and about 2.7 in expenses. The conclusion of that, the council asked for a couple things. One is to go back and look at that, to continue the conversation with the county, to look at a phased approach. How can we phase this in rather than just bringing in the full department on year one? And then also to the conversation we just had is, will there be opportunities to look at decreasing the net cost by potential looking at fees? And so that's obviously a separate conversation, but that was something that you started last time. And so today we want to just talk about overall the plan that we'd like to discuss with you. And it's a three-phased approach. This is all the phases together. Don't worry about trying to read each one, because we will get each one here. So what we are suggesting now is to look at, within this initial phase of three phases, would be to, by next year, July 1st, would be to have our own community development department, but really be focused on what we call our current planning efforts. And so a lot of the day-to-day planning, and not as much the long-range plan that we've talked about. With that being said, though, we'd still have the capacity. Obviously, the next time the comp plan has to be updated, those same things, we would be doing that with the city employees. And so to accomplish that, the first thing that we would recommend is by the end of this calendar year, so by the end of 2018, we would have our director hired. We would have the communication and engagement coordinator, and then one of the admin support positions. We believe that's important, so we have the capacity and for the person that's going to be operating and leading the department to be in place to pull all the policies and all the different pieces together. And so that we estimate to be about $110,000 expense. And we would recommend that would be coming out of this year's contingency funds that the council has.
We have a question here.
Yeah. Steve.
So, Steve, are we? What you're doing is you're making the assumption that we're splitting from the county at this point. So we're putting people in place to start our own.
Yeah. Let me back up. I appreciate you asking that question, so I didn't share that part with you. So rather than a full department that we talked about last time we met, is bringing in, I will say, half the department that we talked about before. And this is focused on the current planning that we talked about. In fact, it's on this sheet right here. So you can kind of look at the community development areas of focus. So overall, admin to land development related ordinances, small area planning and strategic redevelopment, and inherited preservation and urban design. So really focused on those areas. And so the expertise Well, the team would be focused in those areas. And then the county, as you see, areas of focus for future discussions, would continue all the other things that they're doing today. And so what we're suggesting in the larger time frame is have us stand up this department of smaller scale, very focused on some of the areas that are really, as Rochester has grown, the type of needs we need in urban design in those areas, so we could focus on that and some strategic redevelopment. The county would continue in the other areas, and they'd have to determine what number of teammates they would need for that. And then we'd have to give that some time, because we'd have to see how that can work. It's almost a hybrid model, if you will, and give that some time, a year or two, whatever it would take, to see if that's working. In my conversations with the county administrator, we believe that that's a setup that we'd both be interested in exploring. And then check in, and if it's working, then hopefully that'd be a long-term solution for many years. If it's not, then we'd have to pick up the conversation where we were maybe in May of looking at potential more capacity within the city. Does that help?
Yeah, I'm just curious. So this is a group that you would think you'd need right away?
Yeah. So we'd say to take on our current planning, we would, in the first phase of this, we would hire the director and one of the admin supports, and then this position. And then phase two, if I can go back to, phase two would then be to hire the rest of the department. And so by July 1st of next year, so just roughly a year away, that's when the city would assume responsibility for the current planning, as we're calling it.
So one of the things I'm still not clear on is where there might be overlap. So maybe a hypothetical. Let's say we were talking about a commercial / housing development out off West Circle Drive, for example. And traditionally today, planning department gets very involved in that, whether it be zoning, land development, et cetera, and we rely on their expertise as we formulate our decision. How would, and maybe you haven't thought this through, but how might that hypothetical work with the county planning services still doing what they do and this small area development function?
So maybe a simpler way for me to say is we would focus on the planning and development within the city, and then the county would continue for the rest of the, so if it's within, the borough would come in, all the processes would go through our employees.
So in that case, because it's within the city limits, we would do, this area would take on all that function.
We would have, within community development, you would have all development review, and so conditional use permits, site plan reviews, general development plans, any of those types of applications would be made directly through the city planning department. It's really that long-range planning that would retain with the county, and so for the council members that are on the planning advisory committee, one of the concerns about the separation and the creation of a standalone county department, standalone city department was, are we going to fall off on sort of this long-range coordinated planning that occurs both at, in the long-range planning department with the county currently, but also as you roll up into ROCOG and other kind of joint collaborative efforts that way. So those areas would continue to be joint, but where we feel we have most of our challenges and the development community has most of the concern is making sure that those land use applications are kind of going through an integrated process, not just within planning, but within building safety, within public works, and the goal fundamentally of making sure those three functions are fully integrated under economic growth and community investment. So most of what the council will see on a day-to-day basis will come from the city planning department, but if you do the long-range transportation planning update or something like that, that will continue to come out of the joint effort.
Yeah, and it just, all, my only comment is it sounds like there's some duplication here, so what I'll want to understand is how does that make it better?
One thing we're trying to avoid is duplication, and so we have talked about once we know where the county wants to go and the city council wants to go, that's where we have to really make sure that we go. There's levels and levels of details to this, but the ultimate goal of the framework is that we have very limited duplication.
Okay, Mr. Hickey.
So, I understand the desire to have control over our own planning, so that's, the merits, it's a great thing to have. I don't understand how we're going to pay for it. So, looking the last several years, not that we wanted to, but we've kind of raised the taxes as much as we thought we could reasonably do to provide the services that we already provided. And each of those years, we hired a very limited number of staff. So with this kind of staffing, are we just not going to hire any policemen or firemen or any other departments for the next, you know, 2 years as we staff this up? If not, you know, where is that extra money coming from? Because I don't see that.
So ultimately, that'd be, you know, obviously it's the policy question of the council. If you did want to start down the path of your community development department, as we're saying here, it's a net right of $1 million to $1.2 million, we believe. So the percent, it's about just under $700,000, about percent of property tax increase, levy increase, you'd have to have something for 2%. You could just use that for discussion purposes. We have not put this into the budget yet. So one of the things we talked about is if the council wants to move down this path, we have to start integrating it into the. There's really two ways to pay for it right now. One is property tax. Two is to look at your fees. We said right now it's about 25% or so cost recovery. And so you know, just doubling your fees, which I know is a difficult conversation itself, isn't even going to get you to where you need to be. So I think the property tax is the reality is today, and that would then, you'd have to prioritize that with other things that we've been working on to date.
Mr. Vilbeck.
Steve, I just want to, and Aaron, I just want to hook on to a hypothetical kind of where Randy was.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a property that isn't in the city, so the county does the planning for it. But what happens within a year or two, that becomes part of the city? Or what kind of communication links are going to be set up to make sure that a building that comes from the county into the city meets the standards that the city was looking for, or vice versa? The county is going to build a larger building outside the city limits. How do we make sure that we're working on the same set of plans so that, I mean, we're talking about the city continuing to get larger. So if it's, you know, a block out of the city, it's not going to take long for it to become part of the city. How do we make sure it works?
And that's a good example. So from our very initial conversations, and some of the teams here that sat down in those meetings right away, we were just talking about the pros and cons, if you will, and what are things we don't want to lose sight of if we do start to have two different departments. That was one of the key parts, was that we don't want to lose sight of that understanding and knowledge of what's happening comprehensively. And so, you know, Heidi and I have talked about making sure, and Aaron, that we have a system in place that, because most likely we're going to be in different buildings, that there's a system that makes sure that the communication is happening, that leaders in both areas are meeting to talk about these things. That's a good example, because you're right, if it's something that we can pretty much predict at some point, it's going to come into Rochester, you know, we should have those conversations so we understand what's happening, and vice versa, as we do things.
Yeah.
That the county needs to understand.
And maybe I'm getting too deep in the weeds, but I'm looking at, you know, I'm hoping that you're around 20 years, 30 years down the road, as our previous one was, but that's a pretty far-fetched look anymore. But how do we set it up to make sure that there's consistency and continuity between, regardless whether the players change?
Mm-hmm. And that's arguably been one of the so-called benefits of the consolidated planning department, and I realize people debate that, but nevertheless.
Just on that point, for Councilmember Bilderback's point, right now, irrespective of the operational model of planning, you're still falling under different land use ordinances, and so, you know, while they might, you can try to forecast what that might mean, the reality is if someone comes in under, you know, a township ordinance or the county ordinance, and potentially will integrate into the city, they still are going to come under the ordinance where they currently have jurisdiction. So I think that's still an issue you have to reconcile today.
Yeah. Mr. Campion?
Sorry, that was going to be my statement. Was just the, like, edge growth. There's a reason that those developments happen, like, a block on the other side of the, you know, the road where the line's drawn, and it's because they're looking to get the jurisdiction that they want to do the development. It's not because there's not land available in the city of Rochester, right? So, I do understand. I think particularly for the long range planning, there's huge benefit to having a collaborative initiative around that. In terms of executing something like a conditional use permit for a building on West Circle Drive, I don't really see a whole lot of duplication if we take over the effort, because it is a completely separate jurisdictional ordinance. Like, our city ordinance is separate from the county ordinance, and they're completely different processes with different steps and different organizations that have to work through them. That's not to say, you know, does it help to have one zoning aware person in both? That could be a benefit. But at the same time, that person is now required to have twice as much knowledge as a single person executing a single set of ordinances in a single with a single drive. And so I think, I don't know if that's been covered yet, but the part about the, I think there is a part about revenue, and we do have to understand the cost, but the revenue side of it of, are we missing out on opportunities because we don't have an Office of Economic Development, because we don't have these things that nearly every other city that we're competing with on a national scale has those. That's just a practical reality of modern municipal government. I can walk into the city of Austin, Texas, Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I can find the person who's the development officer for that city who's going to meet me and figure out how to get something done. The fact that we don't have that is something we should be concerned about. I look at this as being a solution to that problem.
I'm not arguing that, but in the meantime, we've got to have ways to make sure we can communicate and we have a consistent stream going back and forth regardless of who the people are. And if we don't, and we lose that connectivity, we're going to be looking at some issues coming down the road. And I don't want the future councils to have to do that. I want to make sure we have a clear path and a clear idea of how we're going to be doing this so that we start it off in the right direction and not have to try to backtrack and fix it.
Sure. I think the whole aspect of community development, I agree with that in concept. That's something I know we've talked about, especially with the advent of Destination Medical Center. Sometimes I feel like Aaron or Port Terry Spaeth are just inundated, can't keep up, and just the DMC project. So clearly I think we could augment our staff, and I think that's why originally I liked the idea of augmenting the planning area that we have with some additional function, kind of like we're partially supporting Kevin Bright and looking at the energy aspects. Are there things we could do to augment that staff with skill sets that are more city focused? Maybe it's small area planning or something of that nature. So I am very much in support of the concept, and I think we do need to supplement our staff. Where I'm not quite as comfortable is the scope of what's being proposed. That's where I'm not there yet.
I just want to feel people out because I kind of feel passion for this particular topic. The idea or the issue in your mind is that we'd be creating a city department versus funding the same positions inside the county. You'd rather see them inside the existing planning department and funded by the city.
Well, and again, that's why we talked about the hybrid model, if you will. I'm looking for the best return on the money we invest. Is it better to, in this particular proposal, set up somewhat separate staff, new facility, new building, all of those things we have to worry about, or is it, can we achieve some of the same appropriate or measurable results simply by augmenting what we have? I'm not sure. I'm not there yet. And I know we have a continuum, and that's where we were just talking about these options and what the trade-offs might be and the costs. So,
yeah, I guess in my standpoint, like, I'd like to drive to, let's figure out what we're going to do, because it is 2019 budget. We're going to start getting into that process. And from my standpoint, when we had a discussion, it was, I think we had 6 votes or 5 votes to kind of move down the path of a hybrid model. I think that this represents the hybrid model. I just want to know if this doesn't represent what people are thinking of the hybrid model, what does that look like? Because at this point, the county has basically said, we're not going to fund additional positions that are outside of the core existing mission. The hybrid model, to me, has always been the city standing up something to see that serve as a sister organization to what exists in the planning organization. Now it's a matter of, you know, how big is that organization? Is that kind of the tepidness? I'm just trying to feel it out.
I think that's fair, Nick. I mean, I don't think any of us, or at least I'm not trying to say this may not be the best phase to go or road to go down. But what I want to know is, how's that laid out?
Sure.
How's it connecting with the people that we still need to work with in the county? Because we still are part of Olmsted County. And I think those are the kind of things, and maybe I'm getting too much into the weeds, but I'm just kind of interested in how fast is this going to go? How do we make sure that we do this in a smooth transition versus a bumpy one? And so, yeah, I guess I am concerned about how fast do we grow the department? What are the needs of that department? What are we hoping to do? Are we going to have goals, metrics set up for when we start to go down this road? And then how do we make sure that we don't lose the continuity with the people who've been doing the planning so far. Mm-hmm. So I think,
yeah.
You know, I just looking to see, get comfortable in how this all connects.
Mr. Hickey?
So again, you know, I don't think we can hand wave the cost on this. So again, there's the concept sounds great, and if I had been around back when the talk of consolidation, I probably wouldn't have been in favor of it. But here we are. And I've talked about, I've used this analogy before, but it's in the same way we do personnel decisions, where we lay them all out at the table at the same time, and we have to make a decision based on priorities. So if we say this is the absolute top priority, and we're, again, we're not going to hire, what, again, policemen, firemen, I mean, what's the trade-off? Because from what I've seen the last several budgets, it's not like, well, we can just turn it up a little bit more and just increase the pain level. We levied as much tax as we thought we possibly could, and then we had to make hard priority calls. So if we're saying this is the number one priority for the city, then everything else isn't going to get funded. But I think we need to look at it all at once. We can't just look at this and say, isn't this a great idea?
And I wanted to answer Mr. Campion's question a little bit further, because I think you were kind of asking, so what do you mean when you talk about hybrid, or what are you looking
yeah.
for? And I think, as I think about that, what I'm looking for is a bit more surgical response. So, for example, supporting the communications and engagement coordinator. Absolutely, I agree with that, because we're trying to specifically engage a variety of communities, neighborhoods, developers, and so forth. And I think we need to emphasize that, much like we've partially funded the energy individual with Kevin Bright. So I think those are some aspects where I can see a more direct correlation for we're going to invest in that position, that skill set, and it has a direct impact, positive impact for the city. So maybe that's where I'm a little uncomfortable when we talk about six senior planners. I'm trying to understand what they would do, because I know what the job description is for a planner. So, Mr. Campbell.
Right, and I think I understand. I'm just trying to find the path forward. So if we want to keep going on, I think the problem is we're derailing your presentation. But I agree. $1.2 million is not nothing. That's a lot of money to dedicate to this. When I looked at it, a one-year timeline, maybe that's too aggressive. Maybe we need to figure out if we can ellipsize that and go over a couple of years to fit it in the budget. I don't think this is the only priority. I don't think that's the message we want to deliver. But again, I think when we talk about it, it's 2% tax levy. So we do need to figure that out. It does need to be part of the budget analysis, but maybe if it's three senior planners with a focus on the DMC district for 2019, and then broader effort after that. But if the council's not willing to fund it at that level, I think it's good to know, because then we just have to figure out if it's worth doing, if there's a strategy for doing it. That second step is the big one. I think the $100,000 to get people in place to do the rest of it makes logical sense given the gaps I'm seeing today.
Yeah, and I think it was rather fortuitous that we had the presentation just prior to this, where we talk about gaps, growing gaps, and how we're funding current services. So, you know, adding something else on top of it is going to be even more challenging.
And maybe if I took this discussion down a road we didn't need to get into, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're looking at a 30,000 foot, and I drop down, and I want to know, well, how's this going to work, and where's it going to work? And those are things that are going to have to be figured out. I think all of us want the best for the city of Rochester, and it'd be one thing to say 2%, but when we're looking at a 7% start or a 6% starting rate of property tax increase, 2% all of a sudden becomes a lot more than 2%. And so trying to figure out how all this is going to roll, and I agree with Mr. Hickey, too, when we talk about we don't want to say, well, this is our number one priority until we get all of them laid out in front of us, because every department for years has been saying we're short, we need help. And this is a new department. So trying to get comfortable with where we're at and how we're trying to put the puzzle pieces together is where I am at. I don't think this is a bad thing. I just want to make sure that we're doing it in the best use of taxpayer dollars and the best interest of the city of Rochester going forward. So.
And I would concur wholeheartedly with the prioritization. That's a word we've used many, many times in the last 9-10 months in talking about both your capital as well as your operating budgets. And so the way the budget will be brought forward to you this year, you will have all the building blocks of every single what we've called decision package in front of you. And so you'll see everything from new vehicles to new employees to new technology to even potentially this then. And that's where ultimately we would bring forward a recommendation, and then you'd have a chance to see if those, if how we prioritize it meets what the council feels. So any discussion around this, which I'm hearing tonight, is helpful, because if the council does concur that you want to at least bring it forward in that process, you can consider it, you know, the pieces that have been put together that way. I also know in talking with the county administrator that they have a interest in meeting with the board chair, council president, and both the members on PSC to have this type of conversation, I think, to bring those groups back together after a couple months of individual conversations and see if the two organizations feel that this is heading in a direction that makes sense for the community. So that'd be another, at least a discussion point, if the council concurred that it makes sense to have the three of your colleagues meet with the county and talk through some of these same issues. So, going back to your original point, though, like I said, from day one, if you looked at all the flip charts we filled out, all these details, when we talked about the things we didn't want to lose, were pages long. And so we all agree that regardless of where we go, we have to find a way to make sure that we don't lose that for the community's benefit. And then my last point is, as we look at process improvement, things have been discussed and studied for so many years, one of the things that we do feel strongly in is that we do have, if the council wants to ultimately have a department, we do need to make that step forward to allow that to start to happen, because otherwise we're going to have potential disjointedness in which process you're in. And so there's things like that that we also need to accomplish in that greater discussion.
Steve, do you have some kind of timeline you can give us to, so that can help us kind of figure out where this transition points are, or possible an A, B in the transition period, that if we want to do X amount of senior planners with the developer versus the full six, how that would roll out or not? I think that would be helpful too. I think the big thing is we're looking at this and going, how do we get from A to Z here?
Yeah.
And so I'm looking to see where's that transition, what options would we have in that you would still think would possibly work or could work to achieve what you're looking for, versus just going out and going, bang, here's $1.2 million.
So I think Aaron and I would have to go back, meet with our county planning team and discuss breaking this down into one more level. Because basically took the whole department, looked at a key section, key service area. We'd have to look at if it's possible, and are there any unintended consequences of that, or are there things that we could potentially not achieve, or in a two-year phase. And I understand that, you know, from a budgetary standpoint, absolutely. So if that's something the council would like, we could you know, take probably not surgical to that point, but you know, kind of a high level, we think we could still achieve our long-term goals by having it, you know, adding a phase to this is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that would work.
And I'm not sure until we have a conversation if that's, you know, possible.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Anything else? Any other questions or comments at this point? Sounds like it's work in progress. It doesn't sound like we're all on the same page just yet, but certainly something to continue to explore.
Can we get a bit of clarification on the work for this phase one group? So I think in particular, one of the more immediate decision points is when to begin or if to begin, because that's a 4Q 2018 timeline, according to the presentation today. So, you know, I don't know if you can offer more today about the value you see just those pieces bringing, or if you'd rather come back to us and talk more about that, whether that discussion's passed now that we have to talk about maybe additional kind of phasing. But, like, I just want to kind of understand for that $110,000 contingency funding, what's the immediate impact of that group, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so the immediate impact of that group, specifically the director and then the other positions to assist, Randy started to discuss some good examples for communications engagement. Those things, you know, the director would really have to start, you know, establishing policy, would have to start getting the positions in place, starting to work on the transition plan with the county, because I would foresee certain projects coming in at a certain date. If we have certain capacity, where it just be, it might not all happen July 1st. Some things could happen before, you know, just conceptually. And so he or she would be really working on that, would be working on ensuring that that culture, the vision that we want to achieve is really starting to set up. Working closely with building safety, working closely with public works, with Aaron, to start that shift, if you will. And then the last piece that the county has asked, there is interest in their facility potentially for other lease opportunities. And so now they're starting to try to make some decisions. And so they're looking for decisions by that council. So I think you guys coming together in that group would be good, because now they're also trying to make some decisions that are dependent but independent of this process. Does that help add to what the director would be, Nick, or did you want more depth?
Well, I just that's a good clarification. Just want to make sure we have that piece as we move forward.
And I think everyone understands that's because it's a very partial year. That's why the three positions were in there. Just so everyone knows.
Do you know what the full year cost is?
The full year would be roughly.
Well, I think just 2 points. One is when you're saying the 1.2 million or 1 million, give or take how you look at it, you know, that is a full year cost. And so, you know, the proposal is to have the transition happen at the midpoint of the year. So for 2019, you're actually likely about half of that cost. So if you're looking at kind of a transition point or kind of easing into the financial piece of it, I mean, that could be spread over the 19 and 20 budget cycles. However, realize once you start that point, you are on the journey to, you know, getting to the $1.2 million. And so if you're not interested in that, you know, I mean, that's obviously good to know. The only thing I would also say, I think there's two things. I don't think this is a do it halfway type of situation. Like, let's bring in half of current planning to do development review, because realistically, that group works well best in, you know, as a group focusing specifically on development review for a city. There's interdependencies that work there, just as a team back and forth, coverage wise, etc. Geography, you know, doing it on a geography basis. I don't know that that would be a way to do this. So I think ultimately, if that's sort of a direction, it would be better off, you know, to kind of fall on one side of the coin or the other, where you fully bring in current planning, or you don't, you look for those ways to continue to collaborate, you know, with the county. I'd also say they're probably the urgency to making a decision here. I mean, obviously, you have to put this in the context of budget priorities, but to the extent that the staff, you know, have to continue to deal with uncertainty, that's not ideal either. And so, you know, while there is, you know, obviously you want to get it right, you want to get, you know, something that you're comfortable with from a policy perspective, you have to acknowledge that and probably come to some conclusion either way on the issue.
And the other thing, though, Aaron, in some of the discussions we've had with the current planning is the difficulty of getting staffing. So it might not be so easy. I mean, there's exterior issues that we're going to have to deal with as well, and that could be some of them. The fact that they've talked about the difficulty of getting people in, we've seen how they've had to turn over the last few years. So that could be a difficult thing too, and I would hope that you guys would look at some sort of contingency. So if we didn't get to fill, where's the priorities fall, and what are our goals and objectives?
I think the anticipation is that a vast majority of the staff that would support the city department will be coming from the county department. Can't say that. I mean, obviously, it's an independent process, but, you know, the positions that are proposed to be standalone recruitments would be the community development director and the development services coordinator or supervisor, and then the community engagement coordinator. Those would be, you know, external competitive recruitments. I think the idea is to balance at least the opportunities provided for existing staff to transition into those opportunities.
Mr. Ruskin.
Move that just to the last second here. Can you go back to the phase two slide? Aaron, what I heard you say was that next year it's only going to cost a net of about $600,000. So that third bullet up says a net of $1.2 million. So and it, you know, it's talking about next year's tax cover that. So I want to make clear, is it $600,000 or is it $1.2 million for next year?
So I would say use $1.2 for a couple of reasons. One, you asked about those three positions, those are $400,000. You also remember to Aaron's point of, and when we talk about is it possible, there's a trade-off in the revenues coming in too. So right there could be a net where you're actually bringing less staff, or you're bringing less revenue, and so you actually have to cheat anything. The other part, though, to answer your question, Ed, is that there's also going to be startup costs, timing costs, recruitment. There's going to be a lot of things. And so we've just put the whole thing in there. Okay. It could be a little less. I wouldn't cut it in half, though.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go into
okay.
a negative.
So the 1.2 is kind of the number we should be looking at. Then. Okay.
And you know, we'll refine that a little more.
Yep.
But you know, there's going to be other expenses.
Yes.
Okay. Is the $1.2 million in addition to what we currently pay for the services that we use the county for? No. So the so what we currently pay now, we would recoup that, correct?
We don't pay anything.
Yeah.
We don't pay for services.
They get the fees. Permit fees is what they get now.
That's true. That's what they're saying.
So yes, that if that switched over, I would see that the city would get the permit fees, and so we would get some money that currently goes to the county.
Okay.
It,
but that's not taken off. What's that?
This is a net number. So
okay.
So we'd have expenses of say 1.5 ish.
Okay.
7, and then the revenues would come
perfect.
In.
Perfect.
So
thank you.
Clarifying.
The
answer
is better.
What's that?
The answer
is better. Okay. One other thing that I heard earlier was double the fees or a 2% hit, and I think maybe breaking that down or having a better understanding of that, because I don't want to double into the fees. I don't want us to be driving development away either. So, you know, I think that we need to kind of have an understanding of what, how might we work through this and what that net cost would be so that we have, you know, these projections and stuff and ideas are good, but I'd like to see it a little bit more spelled out so we can kind of see really.
The double is just an example of that would only get us
right
partway down the road,
right?
And even that's a difficult.
And maybe accomplished, you know. But how, if these are the real numbers, then how, where are the real revenues coming from, so that we can see that projected out and understand what we have to play with there and how that might get accomplished.
We'd obviously want to go through a good process with our you know, development and RAB and other.
Yep. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Anyone else?
So maybe just to summarize, to make sure that when we leave this, we're on the same page.
Always good with this group.
So this is another good conversation, like you said, in your multiple conversations on this. We are going to go back and we'll look to see if there's some different phasing. We do think it might be difficult, but we'll look at that to see if it's possible. We'll do a little closer forecasting what those dollars expenses are, or the expenses are for 19, but don't expect a lot of savings there. I would suggest we'll plan to start going down the path that we will be considering this within the prioritization for the budget, recognizing that the council will see all the different building blocks that make up that, and then if the council wants to either change it, we could. There's some things we're going to bring to you that we don't have included. We may, this may be something that you'd want to do that. We could say this is a policy decision that we want to bring to us, but don't include in the recommended right now, and we can make the decision on prioritization. So we can work through that. But to get to that decision point, I think it would be valuable, and that'd be in September when you'd have those conversations. So it's not that far away.
How about your phase one conversation? Because that was for Q4. Are you going to, are we going to wait till September to have the Q4 decision?
I don't think we can go down that path hiring a director if okay. the department's not going to get stood up, unless, I mean, we'd have to have that position, but we'd have okay. to.
Yeah, I guess like that's a little bit of a struggle for me with the way the conversation has played out, and I guess I would kind of ask the fellow council members for additional support or under clarification is, like, there does need to be a decision point. If we're saying we can't decide on whether or not to stand up a standalone department until we do the rest of the budget, then that's also good to take back and put into the cycle, because then we shouldn't even worry about the phase one thing until 2019, I guess would be my point. Because if we're not going to have that conversation until September, there's no way we're hiring in Q4, or we're hiring people up for Q4. That'll be too short of a timeline. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it'll be tight.
Okay.
It'd be first quarter, we'd get people in, which still would be possible. I mean, the more lead time we have, the better, but I don't think it's...
Gives you,
and
okay.
We'll also look if there's, if the council's interested, potentially sometime in August, if time allows it to count, we could bring forward some of the prioritization discussion, where it's not every detail, but some of the larger items, if you will, that are going to probably, we're going to prioritize these against, including some of the capital. I mean, you talked about your nurse station, the same concept, that'll be coming back to you in that same framework like you did.
I'm sure once we start to roll all this stuff up, it's going to get pretty sobering.
It will.
Mr. Bullebeck.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to stop where we're at. I think where we need to continue to move forward, but I do think we need clarification on some of these things and understand when can we look at how this is going to be put into a prioritization pie, per se, so we know where we stick our thumb and what we pull out. And that's all I'm saying. I think we just need to have understanding that we'll have that so that we can sit down and make those kind of looks and decisions with the whole pie, not just a part of it.
So I think in August we'll come to you and we'll talk about our baseline budget. That was one of the things we want to make sure you saw before we start talking about enhancing services, so you understand that and you know, to make it simple, the paper clips and pens, you figure that out. You agree with the number of lines there, but now let's look at the items that like this. And then we could share some of the things that are starting to come in so you can at least start in your mind framing up where you see this compared to other positions or other items.
Yeah, because this is a big change from where we've been. I think it's a benefit to the city. It looks like it would benefit the city greatly, but I think I won't speak for the rest of the council, but I need to have some comfort that we've got some smooth transitions. We have an understanding of where we want to go and what the objectives and goals are and how that's going to work and then how we're going to continue to stay connected with the communication back and forth with the county. So, you know, I think that's important.
Okay. Anyone else? Any other business then for this afternoon? Mr. Mayor?
Just to remind you and to announce or whatever that next Monday at 10 in the morning we will have a historic joint swearing-in ceremony with our fire chief and police chief. The police chief actually is on duty this Thursday, the 26th. We obviously already have our fire chief here, but that is, and this will be not just a simple pinning on a badge. We want this to be pretty high on the pomp and circumstance thermometer there. So hopefully you can all be there. Public's invited. We're inviting officers of and the Sheriff's Department, officers from around the community outside of Rochester, so hopefully people will come to honor these two new chiefs that we have. So Monday, 10 o'clock, Suite 101, I think it is, over at the Civic Center.
Okay. Ms. Johnson?
A couple of months ago, we had talked about permits for dogs on patios, so I just wanted to give you guys an update on what I learned from the health department is they don't need to regulate the day permit. So I sent this, forwarded this to our city attorney, and he gave a few options, which I'm happy to read to you guys and just want to hear your guys' feedback on this because it's currently a practice that's going on is people are having dogs on patios. The current city ordinance states that the dogs, that they have to have a one-day permit that needs to be renewed. So this is what Jason proposed, some responses he had. Option one, we can amend the ordinance to allow dogs for more than one day. The state requires we have a minimum requirements, which is spelled out in statute. Our ordinance would need to be amended to be consistent with the state law. Option two would be to delete the existing ordinance. Technically, dogs would not be legal on patios, but the city is not enforcing this now, so it's unlikely to do so in the future. Or three, do nothing at all. But once again, there's no enforcement now, so why would we keep an ordinance on the books that we do not enforce?
Wait, so deleting the ordinance makes it illegal?
It's illegal under state law.
Okay, so we have to enable it.
We would have
to. There's an exception in state law that allows cities to allow it if the city regulates it.
And so my thought on that is if we... if we have permitting, then people would know that patio is dog-friendly, and if they don't want to sit outside with dogs, then they know that there are dogs allowed at that place but not another establishment in town, or if people are downtown visiting or out for a walk with their dog and want to have a beverage or a bite, and they want to take their dog with them. What's that?
So what are the requirements for the permit now? For the day permit?
Is it a $10 fee per day?
I mean, do you have to do anything?
15.
Do you have to meet some requirements, or you just pay a fee?
There's requirements that I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Anissa, that the dogs are not allowed to sit on chairs. They're not allowed to eat on the plates that people eat off of.
Good rules.
That the restaurant has to have a sanitization station or a way to clean and sanitize after if the dog makes a mess. And dogs must be on leashes, and dangerous dogs or potentially dangerous dogs are not allowed.
Do So in order to regulate, do we have to have a permit, or can we just have regulation on the books without a permit process?
I think we have to have a permit. That's what I was thinking, too. It'd be easier just to allow it. But
so we are obligated to issue a permit for this?
Yes.
We can make the permits free? And well, we can make them permanent?
I would rather make it for the cost of the permit.
How much is that? Okay. I would rather there not be a regulation for things that
If you don't, then, like you said, it's drop under state law.
Yeah, right. I mean, we got to have one.
Kind of like minimum.
I would say let's bring forward an RCA with the minimum cost.
Yeah. And minimal regulation necessary.
Yep. Gotcha. Their bike could be worse than the park. Could be upset the state.
That's my next one, Mayor. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, anything else? Then we stand adjourned.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.